My guest today is another big league pitcher. We had one on last week in Corey Gearin, and this chap is going to give us a very different perspective from Corey, I hope. I think this is going to be a bit of a different conversation. He's appeared in 55 major league games across a career that spanned the San Diego Padres, the Boston Red Sox, the Chicago Cubs, and the New York Mets. He's also played for a number of other organizations during a long and storied minor league career that we're going to dig into. And he is currently the staff ace of the Doosan Bears of the Korean Baseball Organization, holding a 2.15 ERA. He's also, in my opinion, one of the most interesting players in baseball. And I'm really excited to talk to him about some of his interests outside the game. So welcome, Robert Stock. Thank you so, so much for your time.
Thank you. That was quite the introduction, making me feel good about myself.
So how are things going in Korea? I'm just really interested to sort of dig into it, because it you know, on the face of it, watch the odd thing on Nava, but scouting the stat line, it seems like it's going pretty well. You know, you were known in the big leagues, particularly in your time with the Padres and the Red Sox, as a power reliever. So how's the transition to starting been, and how are you settling in over there?
It's going great. You know, people quite often ask me how I'm enjoying Korea. And the best answer that I can give is that because it's been so easy, you know, I've got a good place to stay. My wife made it. She's safe. We're, you know, eating good food. I can really just play baseball like a normal season. So, you know, Korea is great because it's just feels like back home, where, you know, obviously it doesn't feel just like back home when I can hardly speak to people.
Yeah.
But we're very comfortable and able to settle in and play baseball just like anywhere. So that's all that I can ask for basically for my job.
And in terms of the sport as well, how have you found it? We've had a few guys who've played in the KBO. We've had Dan Straley and Josh Lindblom and Eric Hacker on the podcast before. And they talked an awful lot about, there's a difference in the game, but it's ultimately still the same game. Like the way that the hitters approach baseball is different. And the way that the teams themselves approach baseball is different. So what have been the differences for you, and how have you sort of tried to fit in with your team? You know, you've said that the language barrier is difficult. How have you tried to address some of those issues?
I'm lucky enough that a lot of my teammates can speak some English. And obviously I have a translator, and I've learned a couple key phrases. What's really interesting is obviously the game of baseball was adopted from America, and so a lot of the phrases that they used for simply for baseball, like good catch in Korean, they just like good catchy or something like that. So it's like, oh, I know that. And then in terms of like how the difference in baseball is played, is the biggest difference is the batter's reluctance to strike out, right? So two strikes, the goal is immediately just foul it off any way you can. In the major leagues, they're like, well, I mean, yeah, I could try and just make contact, but if I make contact, will it be a hit? Okay, well, then I need to take a big enough swing that I can do some damage if I do hit it, even if I strike out or don't. In Korea, they're like, no, we don't care. We'll just stay here and just try and foul it off and put it in play anywhere and see what happens. So, two different strategies. I don't know. They might be the best strategy for each league is what I would guess. Is that if you try to adopt one in the other league, it's not as good.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how has that transition been to starting? I know you started a couple of times in the bigs for the Mets last year, and you were starting in AAA for them, but that's kind of the start of, sorry, forgive the awkward syntax, it's kind of the start of starting in your career. You know, you were always really a reliever, weren't you, throughout the course of your career in the minors, which we'll tap into a bit in a moment. So how has that sort of been, that stretching out process been for you, and how has that been in terms of the way you've changed your approach as a pitcher?
It's been great. It's been the reason why I was really excited to come and sign over in the KBO, was to be developed as a starter. There's a great chance that when you're in the major leagues, it's like, hey, you're starting for us, or sorry, when you're in just, you know, the United States, you could be starting in AAA and doing a good job, but the team needs a reliever, and it's like, okay, well, good job starting, but you're back to the bullpen or something like that. Whereas in the KBO, I can't be called up anywhere further than where I am. So starting. And as for how the experience is going, it's going exactly how I would expect it to. It's it's great. You get to pitch here. It's once every 6 days because there's an off day every single Monday. And which once every 6 days, you know, you're in there for like seven innings, like the whole full game. And then for the next 6 days, over the next 5 days, you're just working out and watching baseball.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, that's perfect for you. You know, you're on a workload where you're used to, you don't know what you're going to be doing on any given day. So I guess having that element of routine must be infinitely preferable. I know some guys absolutely thrive on that, don't they? They want to be pitching every day, but, you know, I guess maybe you're not one of them.
Yeah, I like to know if I'm playing that day or if I'm not playing that day. And then maybe if I'm not playing that day, I'll go to the park with my wife in the morning before the game, whereas I'd try and like say, you know, a little bit more fresh if I was a relief pitcher or something.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I guess I obviously, you know, you were known when you were in the big leagues as, you know, throwing the ball very hard. So that's always been the danger for you, that even if you're starting in AAA, they're going to go, all right, we need a guy, or Robert can throw 98 miles an hour. Get him in the bullpen tonight, right? So is that always like the danger in your career, that you had this amazing weapon in this like really live fastball, but you know that always tended to see people pigeonholing you as a reliever, though?
Yeah, I think that's definitely could be true, but definitely walking people tends to put you in the bullpen.
Yeah.
So that's been my biggest focus. And you know, it's easy to practice not walking people when you get to throw a lot of innings as a starting pitcher. So I've been very, very thankful to get this opportunity.
Yeah, well, maybe that's where the focus on contact is in your favor in career as well. No, if they try to put the bat on the ball all the time,
that's very true.
So, what kind of maybe is less well known about your career in baseball is your route to the big leagues? And you know, you aren't the only player who took your time getting there. For you, you were drafted out of high school by the Cardinals, and you made your debut with the Padres, which I think was that your fourth organization or your fifth organization when you were 28 years old.
Oh man, I'd have to run through
you're just doing them in your head.
Right, like drafted by the Cardinals, I got released. I went to spring training with the Astros, got released. I went and played for a year with the Pirates. Then I went to indie ball. Then I played double A for a year with the Reds. So that's four big league, one indie ball before signing with the Padres. So that would be my fifth affiliated team. Yeah.
But you were signed as a catcher, right? You were signed out of California as a highly touted catching prospect and made your major league debut 10 years later as a reliever for the Padres. So, you know, if people don't know that story, I know that story because I've heard the podcast that you did with Rob Bradford of WEI whilst you were with the Red Sox. So what happened then? And what was the process of you transitioning from being a catcher with the Cardinals to, I think it was, were you still with the Cardinals when they asked you to start pitching, or had you moved over to Pittsburgh by that point?
I was still with the Cardinals, and they don't really ask you to start pitching. They tell you that you're going to start pitching. When you sign your initial, you know, contract as a minor leaguer, it's for 7 years. Mm. And if you don't like it, well, they still control it for 7 years. So you can't go anywhere else, you know? So after my third year, they have you transition to a pitcher. Is it a coincidence that it was the day after Molina signed his contract extension? I don't know. but they did, and I was just so bad at pitching, so bad for many years. But when I got released by them, I could have gone back to being a catcher. But at that point, I was like, you know what? I've started climbing up the hill of becoming a major league catcher. I had to start, you know, give that up and start at the bottom of the hill to become a major league pitcher. And I don't want to like start again at the bottom of the catcher hill. So I'm just going to see out pitching until I spend a year where I don't get any better. And but that didn't happen, and I made the major leagues as a pitcher.
So what was it like being in the sort of the orbit of the great man as a catcher? Was that sort of like a double-edged sword, I guess? Because then on the one hand, you're like, I can't learn to catch from probably anyone, any, you know, in the top sort of half dozen catchers to learn from in the history of the game. But at the same time, you look at him and going, am I ever going to play Major League Baseball? No.
Well, firstly, learning from at the time, it was Mike Matheny was the catching instructor. He wasn't even the manager. His job was like to work with the catchers. Mm. And Yadier Molina, despite all of his gold gloves and success in spring training on like February 15th, like day one, he's out there at 6 a.m. for catcher's practice. And, you know, the first one to show us like, hey, guys, this is how you should do it. And so what you learn from watching somebody do it, that's the best in the game, as opposed to just hearing them tell you about it, is incredible. The improvements and strides that I made in my catching was unreal. Like, I think my first year without having gone to spring training with Yadier Molina, my catching skills were awful. I probably like led the league in pass balls. Mm-hmm. And then by the time that I got to work with him, all of a sudden I know that like by coaches and me, I also thought that I was catching phenomenally. And it was 100% from observing the best to do it day in and day out, you know? So now in terms of making it to become a catcher of the Cardinals, yeah, that seemed like a tough thing to do, but there's a lot of teams out there and sure. which I've learned throughout my career. So I think I could have done it.
Yeah, I every confidence in you. You know, we could be sitting here talking about, you know, Major League catcher Robert Stock instead of KBO stud Robert Stock. But, you know, everyone has their own path and not all of them are as straight as Yadi's was. So you transitioned over to being a pitcher, but again, you know, you had your lumps and bumps. You were tweeting to somebody earlier on this month about, you know, you gave up a grand slam in your first ever appearance as a professional pitcher. So, you know, again, your journey as a pitcher, you said yourself, you were not great for a few years. So how do you go about building that from nothing? You know, I know when you're in a system like the Cardinals, you can't get better coaching than that, but how do you start? I mean, I guess that throwing is not the same when you're a catcher or in a pitcher, is it?
No, it's definitely not. How I would describe the pitching process for basically 99% of people is that you have to figure out why your arm hurts when you're done throwing and fix it. If you talk to anyone, I'm sure you yourself, you go out and you pitch in a men's league afterwards, you say like, oh, that was fun, but my elbow kind of hurts today afterwards. And that happens for professional pitchers until you figure out what it was in your throw that was causing that and stop that from happening. Because there's so many people that have good arms that can't pitch because they can't do it time after time after time. And that was the case for me when I first started pitching, was that like, oh, cool, I can throw 95 because I'm, you know, have a good arm. But afterwards it hurts. So that means I can only really pitch at like 90 miles an hour and do it again the next day. And it's really tough to pitch at only 90 if you're not very good, because you need to pitch at only 90, you need to have a great breaking ball and good command and all the other things that what's interesting side note of that is like, you hear a lot of coaches say like, hey, you don't need to throw hard to be in the major leagues. Look at Kyle Hendricks. It's like Kyle Hendricks is so phenomenal at making his pitch move and hitting his spots. Like, that's more difficult than just throwing 95 or something like that. You know what I mean? So yeah. I chose the route that was the kind of the easier one. It's just train to throw fast and you don't even have to be that good at pitching and you can have some success.
You're very modest. So how do you train for that? You know, again, and this is something again that you, and I've seen you tweet this several times, that actually a lot of the time when people think they want to work on the mechanics, they just want to work on getting stronger. Is that half the battle really?
Yeah, it's 99% of the battle. There's a reason why you can see somebody transition from a position player to a major league pitcher with very little experience and suddenly be good at it. It's because they already had most of the tools required, which is, you know, they've been throwing a baseball as a baseball player and they've been very athletic. And so they can just pick it up very quickly because they have everything needed, which isn't experience. I'm thinking of, my friend Rowan Wick, who is the currently closing for the Cardinals or for the Cubs. Cardinals and Cubs fans will love that. And then Javi Guerra,
Yeah, I was going to mention Javi Guerra, right? Because, you know, he was, you made your major league debut on the same team as him, and he was a shortstop.
Right. Yeah, and his very first bullpen, so his, you know, he was out of options with the Padres, and they're like, this guy has so much talent, we can't afford to lose him because we might have to cut him if he's still playing shortstop. Let's get him on the mound. His first bullpen, he was throwing 100 miles an hour in his bullpen. Wow. Which is absurd because that's what, you know, in a bullpen, you never throw as hard as in the game because you don't have as much adrenaline. And that was true for him because he could throw 102 in the game. but yeah, so as far as like training, you know, everybody has their different strength coaches who's going to teach them all about the things that they feel are right in like their proper position and form and mobility and all these things. But that's what you need, is to be able to throw hard and stay healthy. It's so much about your strength. And when people say strength, well, can Arnold Schwarzenegger throw 100? No, because he's not actually strong in terms of athletic strength where you have to go fast. That's the biggest difference, is being strong while moving fast.
Yeah, and I guess that's half the battle, is how do you get both of those things in sync, and that's the mechanics, right? Is getting the strength and the speed in balance with one another.
Yep, exactly.
That's really, really interesting. So, and for you, what was that process, and was it a sort of a Cardinals process, or was it something that you invested in yourself? Because, you know, that's increasingly something that's a part of the game. It's, you know, faintly scandalous that minor leaguers are paid what they're paid and then expected to go and give a portion of that money to, you know, guys like Kyle Bodie, guys like Eric Cressy. What was your process? How did you go about making yourself the best possible pitcher that you could be?
Yeah, there's a strength program and coach out in Phoenix, and it's called Evo Ultra Fit. And they're really well known in hockey, not so much other sports, but in hockey, if you go to like the NHL All-Star game, I'm sure like a third of them work with anyway. And I've been using them as strength, as kind of like teaching me how to be strong. And I think that they're the best there is. They're very different. So I even bought my house 10 minutes from the gym there, because I go in the offseason and think it's so important. So vital to continuing to play, to stay healthy and strong.
And the other part of that process is sort of your journey to the big leagues that I really did want to tap into for a minute. There was the time that you spent in the Can-Am League with New Jersey. It would have been easy for you to take a step back there. What was the motivation? Did you just feel like that you and the game were not finished, and that you wanted to find another opportunity to get back on the ladder, back to the big leagues?
Well, it really would not have been easy for me to take a step back, because I would have emotionally hated what I was doing. When I was like young, like a youth player, I was really good. I was played on all the teams with like Freddie Freeman and Eric Hosmer, and you know, I was on the same playing field with all these great all-star major leaguers. And that gave me the mindset that there's no one playing Major League Baseball that is doing something so far above what I could do that I can't get there. It's just a matter of they have figured it out and I haven't figured it out. So it's like a puzzle that I really, really want to solve. So I'm going to keep going until I solve the puzzle, and it's still a work in progress, far, far from being solved. So that's been my mindset. It's just that everything that I see being done by these great major leaguers, it's not that they're like physically capable of doing something that I could just never do in my life. Maybe, you know, obviously like I can't run very fast, and I'm never going to run like Trey Turner or something like that. But for the most things, it's just a matter of like they figure it out and I haven't, and it's a matter of time and work. That's it.
And so how was that process for you, seeing guys like that? Because, you know, I alluded to the fact that you were incredibly highly rated as a young guy, as a catcher coming out of California, and you mentioned that you played on teams with those guys. Was that really difficult for you? Because like someone like Freddie Freeman, you know, his path to the major leagues was really straightforward. He was there so quickly. That must have been difficult for you whilst, you know, you were getting called back by the Cardinals to say, Robert, we want you to pitch now. You're sort of looking at Freddie and going, yeah, but like, that's my teammate. What's happening here?
Yeah. And I mean, it's difficult to see people having success that you would like to have and know that you're so far away from where they are. But I don't think that's a bad thing to have a feeling of angst that you're not in a position that you'd like to be in, because that gives you the motivation to get out of that position and do something about improving yourself.
Absolutely. And what part did that time that you spent in New Jersey play in that? I guess it was that sort of a teaching moment for you? I mean, that's a really good, it's really good quality baseball. I think people who aren't as close to the game as me and the geeks that I do this podcast with don't understand that the quality of independent baseball is really high. The guys that you're playing with there are, you know, they're an injury or a ball breaking a different way away from being in the big leagues, aren't they?
Yeah, well, you know, some of the guys. But overall, it is much better quality than you would assume before you enter the league. You just kind of have to look at the rosters and see that there's so many, you know, most of the guys in the roster were in AA the year before, and they just kind of, you know, aged out. We're like, hey, you're a quality player, but we don't want quality AA players. We want guys that might become big leaguers, right? So there might be guys, there's definitely some guys, like, especially if you look at the Atlantic League, there's veterans there who are better than some of the AAA players, but they're older. So they have less chance of like becoming a good major leaguer than the 22-year-old who might be waiting to find out, like, he's got a cutter that he's never discovered or something like that, right? For me personally, the year before that I played indie ball, I was in the Pirates organization and pitched so rarely that it was absurd. And I'm still bitter about it today that I didn't just get released because of how little I pitched. And so then when I went to indie ball, I told the coach, I want to pitch like every day. And he was like, okay, yeah, we can do that. It wasn't exactly every day, but I wound up setting the league record for appearances, which is exactly what I wanted, was to just, it's very difficult to get better when you don't play.
So, I can totally see how that worked for you. So, yeah, and there are sometimes organizations that just aren't right for you. We've had other guys on this podcast chatting to me, and they've said the same thing. You know, sometimes there just isn't an organizational fit. And, you know, it speaks volumes about you as a person that you went and found a place that was going to work for you, to give you the experience and the time and the care that you needed to take the next step. So let's sort of transition onto your major league career a bit before, because I do want to get into some other stuff. So I feel it's been, like I said, this is going to be a fun chat. It's been quite serious so far. So we definitely need to get into some fun stuff a little bit later on.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, that, what was it like for you when you got the call to say that you were going up? You know, it's always a really interesting story, but I guess for you, because you'd been on that circuitous journey, it must have felt just incredibly sweet to get the call to say, you know, you're going down to San Diego, you're going to be pitching for us for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, I certainly wish that if you got called up, they told you that you're going to get called up for X amount of time.
Yeah, of course.
I've also been caught up where you're going to be there for exactly 24 hours and go back down. The very first time, you know, the manager calls you in their office and they circuitously tell you that you're getting called up. They don't just tell you right away. They want to kind of make it a surprise and really
know the moment, you know. I think I know what this is.
You know, honestly, it could be anything. There's some part of you that's going like, man, am I in trouble? Like, what did I do to get in trouble? You know what I mean? My personal story on getting called up was funny because I was in AAA and we were playing in Sacramento, and my family from Los Angeles had driven 8 hours up north to come watch. And I pitched the night before or two nights before, whatever. So they were driving home. So they had just reached our house in Los Angeles, and I gave them a call to say, hey, guess what? The Padres just called me up and we're playing in San Francisco, which is 8 hours back up north. they had been at the, for like 10 minutes they had been home and then they had to go back.
Oh man, if they'd found out, you know, 6 hours earlier, they just have like carried on staying in their Holiday Inn in San Jose, and they just have
exactly. But no, it was, you know, like, and then when you finally step on the field as a big leaguer, and you're really, you know, you've got definitely have every single motion that you would expect that you should have after playing for so long to reach that moment existed. So it was just a great feeling.
And that was a pretty awesome, you had an amazing first year in the bigs, and that's a pretty awesome bullpen that you were part of, you know, Craig Stammen, Brad Hand, Matt Strom, who's having an amazing season so far with the Red Sox. That was an elite bullpen that Kirby Yates. I'd miss one. Yeah, Kirby Yates, you know, in like his banner year. Yeah, that was absolute wrecking crew that you had down in San Diego that year. That must have been such fun to be just sitting there, you know, chewing the cud with those guys and knowing that you were all just going to go in and throw a zero up right away.
it was a lot of fun. I jokingly say with my wife, but it's not so much a joke, is that it's fun to be good. It's fun to succeed, and it's really not fun to not be good. So try and be good as much as you can.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, I do want to talk to you about a time in your career where you played for a team that was less good. I'm not holding you personally responsible for the 2020 Boston Red Sox, but that was that must have been really weird, right? Like, first and foremost, the circumstances within which you were playing baseball were extraordinary. And it was the same for all players, you know, you whether you're Mookie Betts, right? Everyone's going through the same stuff. But that club seemed to be going through something else entirely. How was that for you, being in this, you know, blue chip banner organization in a sport that you love at a time when the team was, you know, so strange? Like, you know, it wasn't the Red Sox that we've all been used to over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. I mean, what were your reflections of your time in Boston?
Yeah, it's weird because I hadn't been on many major league teams up until that point. Mm. And when you join a team in the middle of the season that has much higher expectations in how they're performing, you can definitely feel, you know, kind of like an overbearing vibe on some of these players that have very large expectations. They're not playing how they want to. But you're new to it, so you don't know it, you know, you don't know, like, does this person always kind of behave like this, or are they, and I'm not saying behave bad, but you can tell when someone is under a lot of pressure, or when they're, you know, feeling happy and not under such, or at least succeeding under pressure.
Because there were one or two players on that team who, you know, you look at their stats every other year, they are amazing. And that year they weren't, and I'm not mentioning any names, but one of them's a designated hitter. It must have been, yeah, strange to be around guys like JD and Xander didn't have a great year that year either. And you coming in is like, you know, Robert Stock, hey, I throw 100 miles an hour. Yeah, fine, go away. It must have been very strange.
Yeah, it was also weird because of all the COVID protocols.
Yeah.
You really didn't feel like a baseball team because you couldn't interact with each other in the same way. You really, it felt as much as like just a normal, like, okay, I go to the field, I do my work and I leave. And it felt like as close as a baseball player could get to like a desk job, you know, where you just show up, clock your time and go home. Because usually it's pretty remarkable after we win a game in the big leagues, like the celebration that happens in the locker room for just like winning a game is like it's more than you would think for any other like level of baseball, but you did just win a game at a major league baseball level. So, yeah. But anyway, during COVID, there's none of that, right? Mm. You can't even like meet as a team in the locker room after the game. And so it really was an odd season. That's definitely, it was an odd season. And me personally, I'm joining the team mid season when everyone's not doing so well. Although I think in September, the Red Sox, the 2020 Red Sox did pretty well, so it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, your record with the Red Sox was pretty good, you know. And I'm in no way being rude or horrible to any of your colleagues on that team. You certainly weren't one of the worst pitchers that year. I mean, it's a low bar that you have to clear. But it was really it, like genuinely, you'd wake up in the, as a Red Sox fan, you'd wake up in the morning and go, when did we sign Dylan Covey? I didn't know he played for the Red Sox now. Like, cool. I like that. But it was kind of a fun thing. Like, who's on the squad this time? Did you spend any time at an alt site, whether with the Red Sox or anyone else? Because that must have been just complete bizarre world as well.
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time in Pawtucket, which was
a weird place to start with.
Yeah, and they've since moved from Pawtucket. That was like the last year that Pawtucket was used as the Red Sox AAA site. That was odd because you might show up to the field for maybe 90 minutes, get your work in that you needed that day, and then go home. Which typically that would sound awesome. I only had to be at work for 90 minutes and then I got to do whatever I want for the rest of the day. But it's during COVID, so you can't really do whatever you want for the rest of the day. You can like go watch Netflix at home or something like that, right? So it was 2020 was definitely the oddest year I've ever had playing baseball, and I hope that we never see the likes of it again.
Oh goodness, that don't we all? So I want to talk about some other stuff, kind of baseball adjacent and a bit outside baseball. So we should probably start with. I know you were put in touch with us by our good mutual friend, Korea's most famous British baseball fan, Mr. Joey Mellows, and delighted that Joey made that link. But you and I had some interactions alongside some other British baseball fans. You were sort of, were you poking the bear, or were you just asking a genuinely honest question about British baseball?
Oh, fans? I was generally asking a question. You know, I was trying to think of myself like, if I had to choose like a football team, you know, soccer for America.
You can call it soccer. I'm not going to be offended.
Okay. If I had to choose a soccer team to be a fan of, like, which one would I choose? It's like, I don't know. I don't know anything about them. I'll probably just choose the one that have the cool uniforms or something like that. Besides, like I literally can name you Messi and Ronaldo, right? So like maybe a team they're on. But then do you really want to choose a team that has the obvious good players, or do you want to be the guy that finds the more behind the scenes players? Whatever it is, I was just curious, especially when I saw that the team that was most supported was the Phillies. That's very surprising to me, because in amongst American fans, they're not so highly rated.
No, so it like what? Kind of the opposite, right? Aren't they like one of the teams outside and after the Yankees that people don't like?
They certainly have their ups and downs, right? So I was genuinely curious, and I found out that some people were very upset that you suggest that they would choose their favorite team based on what their uniforms look like. What I found out the answer was that they didn't choose their favorite team to support based on their uniforms, but rather who they thought was funny and entertaining on Twitter, which is also just as equally valid a reason to support a team. You could support a team for any reason, but if you suggest that it's the uniforms, that could be infuriating to some people. If it's because they like a personality on Twitter, that is the answer.
Cool. Well, look, you know, after this podcast, we're all going to be fans of the Doosan Bears, I hope, right?
Sure, yeah. I just wake up at 2 a.m. or whatever time it is for you and tune in.
It's not so bad, actually. Most of your games are actually on in the morning for us. You know, if you're thinking about the time difference, because, you know, it's 8:30 in the morning where you are now. It's half midnight now. So in, you know, 12 hours, 9-10 hours time, you know, I'm going to be awake in work.
Okay, yeah.
Right? So we could watch your games in the morning. So, yeah, look, we can maybe start the UK Doosan Bears fan club right here and right now based on your Twitter personality. I can't believe that's the answer that they gave you. I thought it was far more prosaic than that. I you know, maybe I'm not giving my fellow British baseball fans enough credit.
Well, the answer I was given was that, like, the reason why the Twitter followers for the Phillies is so high over any other team is because the person who curates the Twitter on the Twitter is such a interesting personality that's who they decide.
I got you.
That's what I mean when they support with the Twitter personality.
Okay, cool. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, Dave, who runs that account, is a fun dude in the same way that we've got a big Marlins contingent over here for the same reason. Peter, who runs the Marlins account, is pumping out far more engaging and exciting and interesting content than the crap that we put out. But yeah, so it's interesting how people come to be fans of different teams, whatever sport they're in, isn't it? And like, look, don't knock yourself for knowing Messi and Ronaldo, because out with a bunch of hardcore nutters like me, if you went up to the average person on the street and said in the UK, I'm like, could you even guess what sport Mike Trout plays? the answer would be no. I can help you by saying he is currently playing, and he is one of the greatest players of all time in his sport. Can you name it? I'd say the only player with any name recognition, well, two probably, is Derek Jeter and Alex Rodriguez, neither of whom have played for the best part of 10 years. So that's where we are.
Yeah. Wow. Well, playing for the Yankees will certainly increase your international appeal.
For sure. And, you know, dating supermodels probably does the same thing. So the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is your interests outside of baseball. So I said in your intro that I think you're just one of the more interesting characters in baseball. And I think that's because you're into stuff that I personally don't associate with baseball players. When I think of baseball players, and you look at their Instagram accounts and you look at their their Twitter presences and stuff, it's, you know, a lot of hunting and a lot of fishing, and there's nothing wrong with those things. It's a lot of weekends with the bros down in Vegas. And that's all well and good. And when you look at your Twitter account, it's like, oh, what's your favorite Radiohead album? And, you know, I'm very here for that vibe. So I do want to talk about Radiohead. It's my favorite band. I know it's your favorite band.
That's awesome.
We could be here all night. But how do you, as a sort of personality in a baseball clubhouse, sort of manifest that? Do you, because I sort of think of this sort of hegemony in baseball clubhouses, right? You know, on the one half, you've got the Latino players playing reggaeton, and on the other side, you've got all the guys from, you know, Tennessee and Georgia playing Jason Aldean. How do you sort of place yourself in the middle of this as a guy who's into like Warcraft and art house films and Radiohead and so on? Are you just like, this is who I am, accept me for who I am, or do you just sort of sit in the corner like, you know, we all would at a party?
A lot of times you sit in the corner and put your headphones on and try not to listen to the music that to you is very awful. no, there's, you know, you can find a lot of things that are interesting to talk with your teammates that aren't about hunting, or maybe, you know, it's interesting to hear, even if it's about hunting, like what they're so passionate about that I have no idea, you know, like, oh, wow, I didn't know that you thought this was so cool, but I can see why that you think it's cool. On that side note, Tommy Hunter is a teammate of mine that was just, I was in spring training with the Phillies, and he was showing us how he got this like potato cannon that could shoot like fish bait 50 meters out into the ocean. From like, he's standing on the beach and he just fires this huge thing, and I was like, that's pretty cool. I could see why that gets you excited, you know.
Yeah. I think I'd be excited by that, to be brutally honest.
But you know, like, it's true that for most of my teammates, their interests don't overlap very much with mine, but that means when you do find a teammate that does have the same interests as you, you hit it off, because you're like, oh my gosh, you know, there's no one else that I knew that liked this, and now you like it too. That's cool. Let's talk about it. Right? So, it's an interesting dynamic, and I definitely, your observations are correct.
I'm sort of thinking, is there like a WhatsApp, a deep WhatsApp group of you and the sort of baseball Radiohead community? So you guys just sort of say, oh God, have you heard the Smile album yet?
Is that... Yeah. If there is, then they're keeping me out of it. They
haven't. So let's just talk about Radiohead, because I can't not, like, it is my favorite band. So yeah. Why Radiohead your favorite band, and how did that happen? Because you know you were born in Seattle, you grew up in Los Angeles, and you live in Phoenix now, and you're a professional athlete. You are not supposed to be a Radiohead fan. We've already established that in the course of this conversation. Yeah. So why are you?
I would say that a lot of people like the music they do because of their parents. Uh-huh. You know. Maybe you like the music you do because your parents hate it or because your parents like it. For me, it's because my parents like it. My my full name is Robert Anthony Stock, mm-hmm. named after the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, who's Robert Anthony Plant. Mm-hmm. My parents are both from Seattle, where they were in like the rock and roll grunge scene. Not maybe grunge, they were a little bit older, but like my dad was... he stopped going to high school in like 10th grade and was in a rock band for the next 10 years. And so they really love music. Since then, he went to college and now actually became an electrical engineer, where he makes guitar pedals.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
In a small world, Radiohead uses their pedals, and they got to go like meet the band while I was in baseball season. So my whole family has met Radiohead and Tom York, and like, my dad had a conversation with it was either Johnny Greenwood or Colin about, you know, guitar pedals and stuff.
Amazing.
And right. So, but because of my family is why I like the music that I do.
That's really cool. And so for you, what were like, I can't not ask this. We had Cody Decker on the podcast like a year or so ago, and he's a huge Oasis fan, and I live in Manchester. And I sort of asked him to sort of rank what Oasis songs you could have as a walk-up song. And I think Radiohead is a little more difficult. But are there any? Yeah. Or is a walk-up song? Or have you ever used a Radiohead for so when you come out of the bullpen?
I never have, but if I was going to use one, maybe it would be like, I Might Be Wrong, that bass beat at the
I
intro.
Like it.
Or, you know. But yeah, no, definitely... definitely, there's very few Radiohead songs that I would feel comfortable playing in the locker room for my teammates and think that they were enjoying it.
Yeah,
I mean, I would be loving it. I don't think they would be. Yeah.
Do you think you could maybe get away with like Idiotech or Myxomatosis? Do you think they'd go for the drop on either of those?
I don't think they'd make it up until that point. I think they'd already be tuned out.
Well, I want to be a fly on the wall when you try.
Yeah. No, that's what, if I have a bait, like actually in my Spotify, I have like a playlist called Baseball Playlist, and it's songs that I think that I enjoy and that also they enjoy, but there's no Radiohead on them. There's a lot of like Sublime and, you know, maybe some Red Hot Chili Peppers, like the, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, you're a little bit more in the mainstream, you know, a little bit something that they're going to recognize, or a sort of grace note that's maybe in reggaeton if it's Sublime, right? Well, I've heard something a bit like this before.
Exactly, yeah.
And so who else are your groups apart from Radiohead then? That seems to be the one that you tweet about most vociferously, but there must be others too. Zeppelin, of course.
Yeah, Zeppelin. Well, you know, if you go back to like Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Black Sabbath, like those are all just like staples of a healthy rock and roll diet, you know. And then recently, you know, I kind of just like cycle through bands that I think are really good, but then I find a new band and I don't listen to that band as much as I did. Like, for instance, Alt J is a cool band.
Yeah.
I went and back before COVID, I've seen them live, you know, and I haven't seen any live music in quite some time. But the most recent band that's been entertaining me is called Iron Tom. My walkout song is an Iron Tom fan or song. And I think that they just kill it. Like, I love their stuff. And then I go look and they have like 1,000 followers on Twitter, and, you know, no one knows who they are. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. So in fact, I think I just tweeted yesterday about how like there's probably so many good songs out there that are like the 10th song on an album that no one had like listens to that are amazing. And like, I'd love to be able to find them all.
I saw that tweet. We're all sort of slaves to the algorithm these days, aren't we? And like the other thing about the algorithm is it's so sort of erratic that I certainly do. I just sort of like cleave back to. I could just put this sort of random playlist that Spotify has made for me, or I could just listen to In Rainbows again.
If
What
you
am I
know that you
gonna
only have 30 minutes,
do?
right? If you know you only have 30 minutes to listen to music, do you want to, maybe try and filter out 25 minutes of bad songs for them to one new good song, or just go to your tried and true?
And you're also a huge, I think you and your wife are huge film buffs as well, right? So is that something that's been getting you through the processing career and helping you adapt? Are you sort of keeping up with your films out there?
Yeah, currently we're watching a show that my translator recommends. That's like a Korean show called Mr. Sunshine, and it's about Koreans, and it's pretty good.
And there's
But
some, pretty good Korean film directors. We've all seen
yeah,
Parasite now,
yeah,
so we all know
Parasite,
that
my
Korea makes films too.
it's been they're like a burgeoning, country and culture that's developing great international film and television. So, but as far as music and film and TV, and it's cool that these days we can say like film and TV and put them on the same pedestal, because some of the best things being made these days is art, is TV, like Peaky Blinders, right? And if there's a better crossover between having Peaky Blinders play Radiohead songs, I don't know what it is.
Debut Radiohead songs as well, right? Never played
Yeah.
before. No one's ever heard this before, and here it is in Peaky Blinders. I'm not going to try
Right.
and do my Cillian Murphy accent. My partner's from the Midlands. She's not from Birmingham, but she's from near to Birmingham. If I did this on a podcast and she heard it, she's not here right now. She'd like she's like she's currently in London. She's away with work. Like it would wake her up if I tried to do her accent.
Right. That's funny.
And that's awesome. Like so, and the other thing I just wanted to touch on quickly before you like let you get away is politics, right? You don't shy away from it, which I think is not common amongst baseball players, is it? And without skirting around the issues, the politics that you don't shy away from is also not common within the baseball firm. And so I kind of wanted to ask you about your experiences of that. Is that something that you've ever broached in the clubhouse? And if so, how did that go?
Yeah, sometimes it's much more common actually that like people will know that I might have a differing opinion than them and come to talk to me about it.
Oh,
And
wow.
then we might have a very long conversation where my goal usually is that, like, do I think I'm going to change somebody's mind in a conversation? Probably not, but I might show them that there is a reasonable and well thought out answer for the opposite of their opinion that previously, like, a lot of people when they have political opinion haven't really spent much time wondering how somebody else came to the opposite opinion and just think that it's because, oh, this person's stupid and dumb, right? But it's like if you follow the line of thinking, then you can see how they why they think what what they do. And on Twitter, like I certainly post some things politically, although I do avoid posting things that need more than 256 characters worth of explanation, because a lot of people log on to Twitter with the goal of like becoming mad.
Oh,
Like their goal is
absolutely.
like, right, like I'm
Absolutely.
gonna log on, I'm gonna find something to make me mad today. And so they can quickly want to read your tweet and read it incorrectly so as to, fuel their rage center. So it's a fine line between tweeting things that you believe, but also tweeting things that you can easily explain. And so that's where Twitter has to find the Venn diagram for those.
That's really interesting about how those conversations happen in the clubhouse and really refreshing and good to hear that as well, because it's I'm not going to say it's ever struck me as a world of closed-minded individuals, but it's a sort of a slightly sloppy mischaracterization of baseball as being a whole bunch of Southern dudes who are going to vote one way because that's what Southern dudes do.
Right. We use the word and hegemony, which
Yeah.
honestly is a word that I've never said aloud. I always just read it, so I thought it was hegemony. But anyway, there's a lot of hegemony in the locker rooms, right? So it's, I enjoy being able to give a different opinion that they've never even heard before and put some weight into it. So maybe to make someone like the wheels think about differences of opinion.
Yeah, you're like the grit in the oyster of their own personal worldview. There are a few of you, yeah. Right? There's you, and there's Colin McHugh, and there's Sean Doolittle, and you're all doing the same thing. But it's interesting. I've heard Colin talk on his own podcast, and we've been lucky enough to have Sean and Aaron on our podcast, and they've said basically the same thing. That, you know, that they've had really interesting conversations along the same lines as you. So that's really, really refreshing to hear.
Yeah. What's I've also had it where like somebody, they love listening to podcasts, and so they come in and the first thing they do is they take whatever they listen to on a podcast about politics, and mm-hmm. they come like ask me for the rebuttal.
So I love I've just that. Been listening to Joe. So you're like the counter to Joe Rogan in the baseball clubhouse. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or at least like the Joe Rogan of the last like 3 or 4 years. You know, as he's gone off the deep end. Yeah.
Oh wow, I absolutely love that. You sort of cast yourself as the sort of sage in the corner listening to your Radiohead until someone comes over and says, Robert, I need you to take those headphones off right now, get that Cillian Murphy shit out of your ears and talk to me right now. I don't know who it is. I'm not gonna ask you to name any players. I've got one or two flashing through my mind right now. I'm sure you could probably guess them. The other thing I wanted to very, very quickly before we finish up is I really love the interaction between you and, is your wife's name pronounced Sarah or Sarah? I always want to just.
She's American, so Sarah.
Sarah, right. It's fine. So yours and Sarah's interaction on Twitter, I think, is really fun. And, you know, without sort of coming back to that difficult time in the Red Sox, there was like a real sort of viral Twitter sensation around her sort of defending a picture of you where you know, let's just say it was taken at an unflattering angle. I love that.
Unflattering year. And it wasn't just the picture. It was unflattering year.
I was being kind to you, Robert. I think we're friends now. Like, you have quite a lot of fun with that as well. I think, you know, is that something that you do consciously? You know, because I guess like I've heard quite a lot of baseball players talk about this sort of shared career, this sort of shared life. Is that how it is for you and Sarah? And is that why you're sort of so public about supporting one another? It must be like really great to have her. And I know you're expecting a little one as well right now too.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the case where her knowledge of baseball, because like she met me already a baseball fan, and then she's been very interested in baseball as a career and all the inner workings of it. So like if you sit down and talk with her about, you know, all sorts of things about the rules of the rosters and, you know, how she thinks a certain player will do in 2 years because she can see that their swing and miss rate on their new stuff plus curveball is so good or something like that, right? Like, she'll talk to me about it. So she understands more than 99% of the baseball fan population. And so when she sees an opportunity for a good baseball joke, she's gonna go for it. And so the tweet you're talking about was the person's like, wow, this person looks like he's like twice divorced. You gotta flip on the Red Sox game and look at this guy. And she responded, well, he's not divorced yet, but if he keeps on walking the leadoff hitter, then I'll consider filing.
Oh yeah, I absolutely loved it. It's that genuinely one of the best baseball tweets I've ever seen, I think, and I think it got the reception that it deserved. Probably didn't help you up there in your, you know, one man cabin in, you know, the third tier of Fenway Park all on your own thinking like even my wife is razzing me on Twitter.
No, in fact she had basically like made the tweet and she sent it to my brothers. She said, uh-huh. You guys think I should tweet this? And they're like, that's kind of savage. Maybe not. And then she held on to it. And when I got home from the game, she's like, hey, do you think this tweet is funny? I'm like, I think that's hilarious. You should hit send. And so she hit send, right?
Nice. So, that's absolutely brilliant. Robert, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for your time. if people want to sort of follow along with your political musings and your music recommendations and indeed your life for you and Sarah and the new arrival in Korea, how can they keep in touch with you?
I'm the most active on Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's how we got in touch, and that's the reason why I made some British baseball fans mad. So that's a good place to
look. You and me both. Look, these people are my friends, and I make them mad all the time. I said you were going to get me cancelled. I think I've just about managed to keep you on the right side of that line. You've been well behaved, right? I think it's because it's like 8 o'clock in the morning where you are. So if I'd got you in like 3 hours' time, I think we'd have been absolutely screwed.
Right, I'd be a little ornery and jaded, and right now I'm just waking up. So.
So and you're on Twitter, you're at robertstock6, aren't you? So that's the best place to find you. Robert, it's been great, and good luck for tomorrow. I know you're pitching tomorrow, and good luck for the rest of the season, and get over to the UK in the off season, and we'll give you a proper, we can tell you all face to face exactly how you should go about selecting your soccer team.
My grandma's British, right? So maybe she's got to show me her hometown or something.
Where's your grandma from? I didn't know that.
I have no idea. I should probably know where. I just know she's from that big island over in Europe.
I love that. Well, you know, maybe the next stop for you is the World Baseball Classic qualifier in September. I might be taking down your number and details at the end of this podcast. Who knows?
Yeah.
Robert, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
Cheers.